Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded April 2nd, 2025. And welcome back to the Age of Barbarism. It was perhaps a conceit of Western civilization, something Mahatma Gandhi famously replied would be a very good idea when asked his opinion of it, a conceit that we'd ever managed to emerge the naked dog-eat-dog jungle. But here we are again, watching culture and civilization collapse, or more exactly, being collapsed. There is a common thread between the horrors visited on Gaza and Lebanon, Syria and Yemen, and that same in lesser-seen places like Sudan and Somalia and Bangladesh. Last August, the government of Sheikh Hasina fell in Dhaka, just as those in Kiev and Damascus did, thanks to the coordinated campaigns of Western-backed activists and their barbarian accomplices. And if you haven't heard about it, there's no surprise. Journalists covering the erasure of their societies are beaten, arrested, disappeared into prisons, and murdered in the street. Professor Jeremy Kuzmarov is a scholar, journalist, and author who writes for and serves as managing editor to Covert Action magazine. Kuzmarov's book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano, and his latest, Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden. Jeremy's most recent article at CAM is U.S.-backed regime change operation has resulted in reign of terror in Bangladesh under darling of the Clinton Foundation, Muhammad Yunus. Professor Jeremy Kuzmarov in the first half. And though the terrorizing of Yemen's population by the United States bombing campaign is getting some press now, most of those reading of the missile strikes and intelligent leak faux pas of the new Trump administration likely don't realize the country has suffered the full might of the empire and its regional satraps for nearly a decade. And even yet, neither the press nor representatives on either side of Washington's political aisles has broached, as my second guest writes, the inherent illegality of the United States bombing campaign against an impoverished country in defense of Israel amid its genocide of Palestinians. Kathy Kelly is board president of World Beyond War, a longtime peace and justice activist, essayist, author, and recipient of numerous awards for her peace service. She has too received multiple nominations for the Nobel Peace Prize. Kelly's book titles include Prisoners on Purpose, A Peacemaker's Guide to Jails and Prison, and Other Lands Have Dreams, From Baghdad to Pekin Prison. Her recent essay at The Progressive is The Real Outrage of Yemen, Kathy Kelly and America's Other Genocide in the second half. But first, Jeremy Kuzmarov and the Nobel laureate's reign of terror in Bangladesh. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy.
Good to be with you.
Well, it's always my pleasure. Of course, now, Jeremy, we all know it's difficult days all over for journalism, but it's not just violent repression threatening independent voices. Before going to Bangladesh, Covert Action magazine, too, is struggling for journalistic survival. Jeremy, who is CAM? What is it doing, and why and how should people care and help?
Covert Action magazine was founded in the late 1970s by CIA whistleblower Philip Agee and some other journalists who wanted to expose the abuses of U.S. intelligence agencies and the CIA and the role that corporations played in driving imperialistic foreign policies and fascistic-like policies in general, whether around the world or domestically. And the magazine has persisted over the last 47 years in trying to provide independent critical coverage of foreign policy issues and exposure of the CIA. And there's no real media out there that's doing that kind of work. There are a few independent online media. A lot of them have become co-opted and corrupted. Certain topics are taboo, and they don't also focus much on foreign policy or provide in-depth investigative reporting. So I think it's really important. I mean, a lot of the public is not well informed on foreign policy issues, and we need more resources so that we can reach more people, help better educate the populace so that there's more of a pushback. We have a growing fascist-like environment. The more people that are better informed can effectively push back and develop independent political movements that will really facilitate social change.
Well, and when Covert Action came out in magazine form, that was really the time of underground publications. That was the sort of counterculture reaction in the 60s to what was essentially then a mainstream media, although you talked about it in different terms, but their hammerlock on information at that time.
Yeah, and this, you know, it's grown only worse. I mean, I think in the 90s you had the, you know, greater corporate consolidation over the media. It's effectively shut out any independent voices, especially on foreign policy issues. And I think you have a population that really does not understand what's going on in the world. I mean, we're seeing the consequences. There's no discourse over these endless wars. The only discourse, you know, recently, like when they bombed Yemen, there was outrage because some of the conversation was leaked to a journalist. But, you know, that journalist was constantly adopting pro-war position in the past and a neoconservative. And, I mean, there's no debate over the bombing itself. It's not an outrage that the Trump administration would bomb, you know, the richest country in the world. Just goes along bombing the poorest country as if it's nothing. There's no debate. There's no even attempt to get congressional approval. So it's an illegal act. Yemen had been terrorized for the last 8 or 9 years. The U.S., you know, supported the Saudi invasion that devastated that country, and they're continuously bombing for what purpose? I mean, you know, we can analyze maybe their geostrategic interest. They wanted to draw in Iran. I mean, this could be part of a strategy of instigating a wider war with Iran. That would be absolutely devastating. And whether that's true or not, just the very act of bombing, I mean, we know that the Houthi are growing stronger. You know, they have not been defeated for all these years of bombing and attack. So, I mean, what is the purpose? And I mean, it's simply immoral for the richest country to keep pulverizing the poorest country. But we have no debate. We have no independent analysis or coverage. And, you know, Covert Action has provided a lot of the critical analysis of the Ukraine conflict, like your outlet. And we look at U.S. imperialism all around the globe. You know, I find I'm happy that there are movements of young people like with the campus, you know, to protest the Israeli genocide in Gaza. But and I've had conversation with people in those movements. They seem very narrow, and they're only focusing on one thing. And I agree it is horrific, but they have to look also at the bigger picture. This is not an anomaly, unfortunately, in U.S. foreign policy. The U.S. is instigating, is arming vicious regimes all around the world and is instigating wars that have had a devastating effect, including in Ukraine, that those protesters have nothing to say about. So our magazine has been spotlighting, you know, and in Asia, we have a very dangerous, you know, military buildup that is leading to escalation of conflict with China. And I mean, the Secretary of Defense went over this week to the Philippines to secure more rights for the U.S. military to operate in the Philippines at a launching point into China. And we've had, you know, we've had articles covering that. I mean, that's not a departure from the Biden. You know, there's a lot of continuity between the Biden and Trump administrations. If you look all around the world, we've had for years now been covering those kind of stories, how the U.S., you know, is cozied up to the Ferdinand Marcos gangster regime in the Philippines to secure, you know, more basing rights as part of this strategy of confronting China. We've had articles on how the U.S. is making over military bases in Pacific Islands that have not been used since the Pacific War and World War II. The Biden administration started investing in reclaiming and rebuilding those bases to provide a platform for attack on China, and that's going to continue with Trump. So, you know, we've been covering these kind of topics, and we've been spotlighting the CIA and the pernicious thing that does, including interference in domestic politics through Russiagate, which is illegal under the U.S. And CIA's own constitution, and how the CIA, you know, we've had a lot of articles on the CIA, how it's infiltrated the Democratic Party, how it's developed the drone industry in Ukraine. These are just, you know, some of the articles we've published that shed light on the CIA. And we have a CIA whistleblower, John Kiriakou, who's on our board, who writes columns. And we'd like to do more, you know, to investigate how the CIA, I mean, this kind of fascist environment that we see now under Trump, had not just come out of the blue. This has been emergent for years, and the CIA has played a key role in that ascendant fascism. And they also, the CIA was key in the COVID planning for the lockdown, which is a form of totalitarianism that took root starting the COVID period. And the CIA was very vital in that. And also there's evidence in the manufacture of COVID through gain-of-function research, which was an offshoot of biological and germ warfare programs that the CIA had developed since the Cold War. And we recently had an article on how newly released documents show that the CIA indeed was involved in germ war operations, incontrovertibly in germ warfare operations in Korea, and covered that up for 70 years and worked with academia. The CIA has penetrated academia, and we've also had a lot of articles on that. And that's part of this fascism. It didn't just start with Trump. The CIA penetrated higher education and co-opted intellectuals who served as gatekeepers to suppress certain topics and to blacklist academics who were genuinely, you know, peace-oriented or tried to take on certain topics and certain corruption in the system. They were blacklisted, and that was set in place by the CIA and their co-optation of academics and financing of academic journals and departments. So these are important things to understand, the roots of ascendant fascism and the cancer. You know, we reviewed a book by David W. Conde. It was actually a Canadian writer who worked in the U.S., you know, moved to the United States, worked in the military in Japan and the U.S. military occupation of Japan, and understood the corruption of the CIA, and wrote a book called CIA Core of the Cancer in 1970. And he had a lot of discussion of the CIA corruption of intellectual life, what he called intellectual rape and incest by the CIA. So we spotlighted that forgotten work, provided a profile of Conde, and his insights still richly apply today. Unfortunately, a lot of those programs continue that he chronicled, you know, in the 60s, 50s and 60s are continued today. And it's important for people to have some understanding of that history, to understand how we are where we are today, and to understand the continued pernicious impact of the CIA, which is in effect an organized crime agency that has perverted democratic institutions around the world and in the United States. And we need to build a movement against that and for a revitalization of democracy. And that would, that movement would have to confront the CIA and other agencies like FBI.
Well, it is the real continuity of agenda. Republicans come, Democrats go, but the policies remain the same. I recall you and I spoke about the David Conde piece, I don't know, a year and some odd ago. You can go to Guerrilla Radio's gradio.substack.com site to listen to the interview that Jeremy and I did on that topic. Jeremy, you know, I'm old enough. I've been at this for long enough that I came in during the indie media period at the turn of the century. In the last century, and it certainly seems like 100 years ago. But we became very used, me and the other people doing the kind of things I was doing, to getting journalism for free because everything was being put up. It was such a melee at the time. And I think a lot of people have just been inured to the idea of having free journalism and not ponying up for it, and especially guilty, I think, amongst those that identify more leftwardly than the others. And this is perhaps the problem with Covert Action Magazine. And I was just talking to earlier today to Dave Lindorf of ThisCan'tBeHappening.net. Now he's over at a Substack as well. All of the independent, really independent journalism outfits are struggling, and they need to convince people to part with the price of a coffee. That would make you guys rich these days. But this idea that people should be paying or putting forward for journalism like the stuff you guys do at Coward Action.
Well, everybody has to make a living. And I mean, yeah, we can't do it without the financial support of readers. So, and, these websites, don't want to go in for advertising dollars that could, corrupt them. So, it relies on, subscriptions. I think it's not a high price, but if you read a newspaper magazine, you do have to pay for it, and otherwise we can't continue to offer that kind of journalism, which I think is very vital to functioning democracy and to the possibility of social movement developing. And these social movements have to be well informed. I think what we see, what disappoints me, is that a lot of people on the left or in these campus demonstrations, when you talk to them, they're not actually very well informed, and their activism becomes very limited because of that. They don't see certain broader pictures. So, I mean, we need activist movement that are well informed and that develop smart campaigns and that have a good vision for the future. So that's another reason I think, independent media is so vital. And then hopefully we can just reach more and more people. If we have more revenue, we can do more marketing and, better promotion.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jeremy Kuzmarov. He is a scholar, journalist, and author. He writes for and serves as what we're talking about, managing editor to Covert Action magazine. His book titles include Obama's Unending Wars, The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. His latest is Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden. His recent article is U.S.-backed regime change operation has resulted in reign of terror in Bangladesh under darling of the Clinton Foundation, Muhammad Yunus. Well, Jeremy, when you say that these activists, aren't super well-informed, or they may be single-issue activists with nothing to say about some of the other things going on, I've got to admit, I include myself in that group when it comes to your recent article. I know I have heard about Muhammad Yunus, and I have heard him referred to as the microloan shark, and know that he's not all that he is put up to be, this another one of these tainted Nobel Prize laureates. But your article goes into a much deeper and darker aspect of the now leader of Bangladesh. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on there and what role the Clinton Foundation and this continuity of these agents, a continuity agenda agents, have in what's happening there?
Sure. Well, firstly, and that's what I mean. I mean, these kind of, and I don't blame people because the media doesn't cover these topics at all. And alternative media doesn't cover it or covers it in a very biased way. For instance, I found, Democracy Now!, a lot of activists go to that. They did abysmal coverage of Bangladesh. They were just echoing the mainstream media and this kind of hero worship of Muhammad Yunus and neglecting that what occurred there was a color revolution. Because what I found out was that Bangladesh had been run by a woman named Sheikh Hasina, who was the daughter of the founder of Bangladesh, and she was reorienting Bangladesh to China and its foreign policy and refusing, U.S. overtures to put a military base. And, she may have had her flaws, but that's why they struck against her. And, the country is now imploding, and this is a pattern we see. And I think the left is silent in a lot of these cases because, yes, they are imperfect leaders. There are problems. There were authoritarian features of her rule, like in other cases like Gaddafi or Assad or Ukraine under Yanukovych. So these aren't heroes to the left. So they're happy. They think, activists are working to overthrow this dictator. And that's how it's portrayed in Democracy Now!, which caters to activists. It's excited. Oh, they're protests. They must be good. But in most of those cases I've cited, the protest movement were actually dominated by either Islamic fundamentalists or, in the case of Ukraine, fascist neo-Nazis, and that they were serving the agenda. They were backed by foreign interests that had a vendetta against the incumbent government, which adopted more of an independent foreign and often domestic economic program to try and, you know, encourage industrialization or develop the local economy, not in the way that the United States or, you know, foreign capitalists or corporations wanted. And a lot of money was poured in by organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy, which, you know, will fund civil society groups, you know, all media and activist groups in foreign countries to stir up opposition, to support these, what it branded pro-democracy movement or uprising. But often they're just creating media networks to promote incendiary propaganda designed to stir people up against a government that the U.S. targets for regime change. And that's what happened in Bangladesh. And Hasina was overthrown in a violent coup. And Democracy Now! Made it seem like they're these brave student protesters. But in fact, the coalition against Hasina was dominated by Islamic fundamentalists. And the interim leader that was put in was Muhammad Yunus, who's a very shady character. Yeah, he was promoted in Western media and Democracy Now! As this guy who helped the poor through microfinancing loan and worked miracles for the poor. But in fact, his Grameen Bank served to basically extort poor peasants. He provided them with loans that had high interest rate, and they had to pay the loan back starting within like 7 days. So how can you build a business in 7 days? You know? And there's a documentary I watched in researching this topic by Tom Heineman, I believe. It was excellent, where he really investigated Yunus and his bank and interviewed, went to a lot of different remote villages and interviewed people who were totally despondent, whose lives had been ruined by the promise of these loans that could afford their own business, but they were forced to start to pay it back within 7 days, a huge amount. And so they had to take out more loans to pay back the initial interest rate and debt, and they got plunged further and further into debt. And almost none of them were able to actually build their own business, and many were saddled with debt, had to sell off all their assets and their homes. Many had to migrate to the capital, Dhaka, and they had to scrounge for work there to hopefully one day pay off their debt. And there were these intermediary loan sharks who were like mafia-linked, who they owed a lot of money to, and they can start to threaten their families when they're not paying back the loans. So this guy is not a humanitarian at all. And then he stole he was accused of stealing millions of dollars and failing to pay taxes. And he basically robbed the poor of his country and others. And, you know, microfinance is touted by the global elite that backs the Clinton Foundation because it's an alternative to things like traditional remedies for poverty and inequality advanced by the left, like land reform, higher taxes on the wealthy, and better social programs. You know, this offers the illusion that, you know, poor people could get rich quickly through these loans, and the government doesn't have to step in with, you know, improving public services that would actually really improve things for the poor, providing better education, better health care in rural areas, and that entailed higher taxes on the rich, or establishing, you know, empowering labor unions and better wage standard in third world countries so they're not paid destitute wages when they work for multinational corporations. Those are good remedies for improving situation in impoverished countries. Not this, these loans, but the global elite loves that. So they elevated Yunus to some kind of hero status when he's a petty crook like the Clintons themselves. And then the media just celebrates him. Oh, we have this great leader now in Bangladesh, and that's how it's presented in the Democracy Now. Either they're clueless or they've been corrupted as well, like most of the alternative media. And then there's no coverage. When he took over, it's been a nightmare for Bangladesh. These Islamic forces who are empowered and who led the way against Hasina have now taken control of the country, and they're carrying out violent attacks on Hindus and destroying Hindu shrines, and there are lynchings that have been reported. And this is a similar situation to Syria, where the U.S. regime change apparatus mobilized, and Democracy Now promoted that as some kind of heroic uprising against the dictator Assad. And now Syria has gone to complete hell with the rule of these Islamic fundamentalists, who are the dominant forces in the anti-Assad movement that were supported for years by the CIA and the Operation Timber Sycamore. And now they're carrying out genocidal campaigns against the Shiite Alawite. And they're allowing the Israelis to expand their occupation beyond the Golan Heights. And Syria was a key country, targeted for regime change in part because Assad was pro-Iran, and Iran was using Syria as a gateway to funnel arms and weapon to Hezbollah, which fought against the Israelis. So the neoconservatives are ecstatic about Syria, but it's been a nightmare for the Syrian people, just like the Bangladeshi people. And there's no elections, I don't think, planned. You know, they keep delaying elections in these cases. So it's not real democracy, and it's a more neoliberal economic program that will continue to be harmful toward the poor. So, activists should be against this kind of foreign policy that empowers these kind of leaders and that ultimately results in ethnic violence and nightmares for the people of those countries. And now U.S. taxpayer dollar went into that. An organization like NED and USAID and others that were funding these opposition movements to overthrow what are considered anti-American leaders, but are more authentic nationalistic leaders for those countries, however flawed they may be.
Well, and you quote in your article, again, it's U.S.-backed regime change operation has resulted in reign of terror in Bangladesh under darling of the Clinton Foundation, Muhammad Yunus. You quote Muhammad Harun al-Rashid saying, Bangladesh writhes under the savagery unleashed by Nobel laureate Dr. Muhammad Yunus. Millions face an impossible choice, death, exile, or submission to radical extremism. It is a continuity of agenda in the darkest sense of it. Jeremy, we're fast out of time. How, again, can people help? How can people support Covert Action Magazine at this moment of need?
Well, please go to our website and become a subscriber. You know, there are three levels of subscribers, $25 a year, or 50 or 75, depending on your budget. And then if you have the means, please consider becoming a donor or a nonprofit. So it's a tax-deductible donation that would help keep us in business, and hopefully we could expand and provide more in-depth reporting on what's going on around the world and trying to expose the CIA and FBI and helping to build democratic movements for change from an informed citizenry.
And that's what it's about. We have to know. And what's going on in the United States right now with academics being booted out of their sinecures and foreign students being sent off to prison camps in foreign countries and everything else, the age of barbarity indeed. Thanks a lot, Jeremy, for coming on again. Remember, that is covertactionmagazine.com. Go help out the magazine. I'm going to take a brief break, but when I come back, I'll be joined by Kathy Kelly, and we're going to talk about America's other genocide in Yemen. Thanks again, Jeremy.
Thank you, Chris.
Escape the narrative. Guerrilla Radio.
Born a refugee, last December he got a master's degree. He was a student at Columbia when the war began. To be expelled and deported had not been the plan, but sometimes you have to step up, and that's what he did. His training started early as a little kid. growing up in Syria in a slice of Palestine, exiled by 1949. Mahmoud Khalil spoke oftentimes before the press who came to cover this protest against the war. The tents which got exactly the attention that they sought to speak out against the destruction our country's policies have wrought. As the bombs kept falling on the children down below, some people had to do something, and the place where they could go was the